many low-income and minority borrowers are receiving lower levels of income immediately after graduation, and so they face higher debt-to-income ratios, and repaying debts can be more problematic, more burdensome, more overwhelming.
The Congressional Budget Office projects that student loan interest rates will nearly double by 2007. Selena Masuta, Free Speech Radio News in Washington, D.C.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. I'm Aura Bogado.
And you are currently listening to WUSB Stony Brook. We're at 6 o'clock on the nose. Time, once again, for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this boiling hot studio here. My goodness, what are we, cooking eggs in here? Might as well try, huh? Wow. Well, of course, you know, it is hot outside, too, so I guess that's the reason. When it's hot outside, it naturally is hot inside, but sometimes it's hot inside without it being hot outside. And that's when I talk about it more. But we won't be doing that today. I want to thank, before we even get started today, I want to thank Chris Crowley, because it's because of him that this radio program is on the air tonight. I got locked out of the studio. Yeah, I got locked out of the studio, and there are these combination locks. I thought the combination was changed because I was trying the combination. It wasn't working. I couldn't get anybody's attention. And I called him. I said, Chris, have I lost my mind? Is the combination different than what it always has been? Or at least for the last, you know, time since we changed it, which we do every 2 days. And he said, no, you just have to pull really, really hard. And boy, the ultimate security. You don't think you have the combination unless you put all the strength you can possibly muster into pulling. I guess that's part of the heat, too. You know, the heat must have something to do with that as well. So, while I'm sweating here, running around like crazy, literally getting into the studio a few seconds before the Free Speech Radio News ended here on this station, and trying to figure out how to get all the machinery working, because every week it's a challenge. One thing I'm trying to do right now, actually, is print out the news. Because what we have is we have an Associated Press machine. But it's not like the Associated Press machine of years past. If you've listened to the station over the decades, you may recall, in fact, I even have some tapes of this somewhere, where the original teletype machine was this huge clunker. It really was called a clunker, because that's what it was. You could kill several people with this thing. It's that big, that heavy, bigger than any PC you've ever seen. And all it was, basically, was just a typewriter a typewriter with a whole lot of electronic tubes and whatever else attached to it. Ancient technology. But the heart of it was a single key, just typing, just like a typewriter, just like an old-fashioned typewriter, except there wasn't a human typing. It was something magical making it type. And believe me, back then, it was something magical. Seeing this machine writing on its own, however slow. If you must know how slow, I think the speed is equivalent to 110 baud, 150 baud, something like that. Maybe even slower. But that's how we used to get our news. It would constantly be typing. You hear these noises. In fact, if you're in the New York area and you tune to WINS, Winds 1010, the all-news station, one of the all-news stations. We have two all-news stations. They're both owned by the same people. I don't understand it. That's the media. But if you tune to them, you'll hear teletypes in the background. Now, they haven't used teletypes in probably 20 years, but for some reason, and a reason I guess I can figure out, it just sounds cool, and they decide to leave it on. But to the uneducated populace out there, they might believe that that's what newsrooms sound like these days, and it's not what newsrooms sound like. You know what newsrooms sound like? I'll pipe in the newsroom, all right? You can hear for yourself. Listen. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Nothing. Of course, there's nobody in there right now, but if there was somebody in there, you might hear somebody talking or drinking coffee or whatever it is they do. But one thing you will not hear is the sound of a teletype, because we don't have a teletype. Actually, no, that's not true. We do have a teletype. It's a printer. It's one of those little Okidata printers that I think go 1,200 baud or something, which we, you know, here at this radio station, we hold on to technology as if it's, you know, a horrible drug habit, because we don't know how to shake it and we don't know how to get any more. So we're stuck with really old equipment, but we make it work for the most part. And so these little printers go on command. What we now have is we have electronic Associated Press. All right, electronic Associated Press basically means that you save a lot of paper. You read it over the computer screen. In fact, the computer screen is right behind me. There it is over there. I don't believe it. Well, okay, as you can see, I'm getting somewhere with this computer screen business. In the old days, the news would just constantly be coming across. Now, you select the news you want to print out, which means going on the computer, pressing certain buttons, saying, okay, print out this information. And what I like to do is I like to print out the latest headlines, what's going on in the world, just what's it all about. Now, when I came in a few minutes ago, probably about 10 minutes ago now, it was in sports mode, because I think the last people to have actually looked at the machine was the sports department on Sunday night. It's now Tuesday night. Gives you a sense of the priority of news around here. I'll tell you what, when there was a teletype machine, there was more news. And I think the reason for that was because you heard this constant drone of the machine reminding you, hey, I'm here, I'm printing news, don't ignore me. But now it's all quiet and silent, meticulously gathering all the information, but nobody's reading it because no one knows it's there. So the way this machine works is you're supposed to hit the escape key to escape out of whatever mode it's in, and then it goes back to the main menu. You can pick from national news, international news, sports, weather, what have you, all kinds of things. But when it has been looked at for a long time, it has to write all kinds of things to disk and catch up and God knows what. So for what it's been doing now for the last 10 minutes, I guess, is just writing all of the news that's come in the last 48 hours. And it's not even to the point yet where I can select the headlines. So that's, in a nutshell, why I don't yet have the headlines. But I will. It is my goal for this program tonight to have some of the headlines, at least. And then we can analyze them and have all kinds of fun, because that's what we do. That's what the purpose of radio is. To have fun.
I don't believe it.
It's still in sports mode. I don't know if it's just looking at all the sports or what. All right, I'm going to have a serious talk with this thing. This is one of the weeks where it all comes together, where everything happens at once. Have you ever had one of those weeks? If not, you probably will at some point. Where, you know, you're working on all kinds of different projects, and, you know, trying to finish off one thing before you move to the next, but for some reason you don't finish off the first thing before you move on to the next, and then all of a sudden, it all comes crashing down at you at once. And that's kind of the week I'm having, where I just find myself having to do all these things, having to fill out all these forms, having to make all these telephone calls, having to be in all these places. And there's just no escape. And, yeah, okay, you know, I guess being here is one of those things, but I knew that was coming. I knew I had to be here. I didn't know that the door was going to be broken. That was a new twist. Almost got me there. I didn't know the Associated Press machine was going to be so bitchy. But, you know, it's part of the challenge of day-to-day life. That's what it's all about. So, yeah, you know, hardware failures, software failures, everything going wrong at once. I guess, you know, in a way you're being tested when these things happen. And you come out of it being a stronger person in the end. But, you know, I wish there was a quicker way to do that. I really do, because it's torture. It really is torture, all these things that are going on. As you know, I'll be going away this summer, and, boy, that in itself, I'll get into some of the details of that in a little bit. Just all the preparations required for that, especially when you're traveling to weird places. It may seem easy to just go someplace on a whim. Of course, there are no whims involved. It's meticulous planning and knowing when you're going to be in a certain place and when you're going to be out of that certain place and getting all the paperwork in order. That's what it's all about. But hey, let's not waste time on my mundane responsibilities and complaints and things like that. It's June. It's June. You know what that is? It's Heroin Appreciation Month. Yeah, you know, they don't talk about that one in the media so much, do they? No. But, of course, you know, it's not going to slip by our radar screens because we have an eye open for what's going on in the world.
I am not no peace creep by any sense of the word. And you can call them people flower children and this and that. Some of them people was loaded on some drugs that it's just too bad we wasn't loaded on.
That's right. Flower Power is going to get you. The Electric Hellfire Club there. And boy, I love those guys. That's one of my absolute favorite albums. In fact, you might recognize some of that music from our own film, Freedom Downtime, because it just fits so perfectly with the Oral Roberts University section of that. And of course, Electric Hellfire being one of the more overtly satanic worshipping bands out there. And it's just something inspiring about that. I don't know what, but some great lyrics in that song we just heard called Hellflower. Hellflower, Satan's power. You grow more beautiful by the hour. You feed our hearts and you free our minds with the essence of the souls that you devour. You slip into a dream without a care. You can see hellflowers everywhere. The scent of evil fills the air. You can taste the magic if you dare. Daisies and daffodils, Valium and Placidils, marigolds and violets, Daylidid and Percocets. I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing any of these wrong. Everything beautiful contains some evil. Flowers always smell sweeter through a needle. Oh yeah, you know, this is the heavy stuff, you know? And it being Heroin Appreciation Month.
On the real. Oh. Check it out. If Pop were a person, you wouldn't be down with him at all. Yeah, he might be fun at first, but then he'd be the one to make you quit sports. Next thing, he's picking fights with your parents, because he's always getting you into trouble. And then before you even know it, he's messing up your grades and everything else, just to get high. Look, if Pop were a person...
Turn that thing off! Can we, for once, these automated machines, as soon as you start at all accepting the drug culture, the automatic anti-drug machine kicks in. Every time. We can't have a working lock on the front door, but we can have this sophisticated thing that can analyze human speech and tone and play the politically correct message of the day. Well, I'm sorry, I don't have to like it. Let me continue. By the way, I did get the news to print out, and we have a lot of it. But I wanted to, in keeping with the spirit of the month, and the anti-spirit of all that's around us, tell you about what's going on in Canada. This is rather interesting. It's called the Naomi Study, the North American Opiate Medication Initiative. You never would have guessed that, right? North American Opiate Medication Initiative. It's a clinical trial that will test whether heroin-assisted therapy benefits people suffering from chronic opiate addictions who have not benefited from other treatments. This is funded by the Canadian Institutes of Health Research, Canada's premier funding agency for health research, and approved by Health Canada. And it's going to be enrolling 470 participants in Vancouver, Toronto, and Montreal. It's been in operation in Vancouver since February 10th. And basically, they give you free heroin. Funded by the government. Meanwhile, in this country, yesterday it was ruled by the Supreme Court that people who use marijuana for medical purposes can be prosecuted because federal law trumps state law. So even if your state says it's okay for you to be using medical marijuana for your glaucoma or whatever other disease you might have, you could still wind up serving time because of that. Meanwhile, in Canada, they're handing out free heroin. Go figure that one out. Of course, you have to be a certified addict, and I understand that takes quite a while to get to that stage. But, it just tells you, you know, the difference in culture, the things that are going on around us. It's kind of weird, frightening, scary, but interesting all the same. All right. Enough talk about drugs, although we are going to have some more of these guys playing. And maybe some other related music. But let's take a look at what's going on in the world. Because it's always an interesting place to look at.
Storm Reaper interest. All the alleged secrets of him
You know, I don't see anything. I don't see anything really that interesting. I'm looking. You know, I don't want to waste your time with something that is substandard or something that you could hear in another station word for word. What's the point in that, you know? There's no point. I mean, it's all Michael Jackson, you know? Michael Jackson waiting for the verdict. What do you think the verdict's going to be? Isn't it something that just is so interesting you want to keep talking about it? Forever and ever? Forget about what's going on in the Sudan. Forget about what's happening in D.C. Forget about Fallujah or all the people dying over there. This is fascinating.
I don't know just where I'm going. But I'm gonna try for the kingdom if I can. Cause it makes me feel like I'm a man when I put a spike into my vein. And I tell you, things aren't quite the same when I'm rushing on my run. And I feel just like Jesus' son. And I guess that I just don't know. And I guess that I just don't know.
Brutal. People trust it because it's a little pill. That shape compared to a line or a needle gives it completely.
You know, it's one thing when you interrupt me, but you interrupt Lou Reed, that's war. All right. I did find something interesting in the news, though. And it's not Michael Jackson. It's got nothing to do with that. A Virginia sixth grader fiddling with buttons on his calculator, something they always told you not to do, has found a defect that's prompted Texas Instruments to replace thousands of devices issued to school children. Dakota Brown, what a great name. Wow, that kid belongs on Deadwood or something. Dakota Brown discovered that pressing a certain two keys converts decimals into fractions. Cool. That would give students an unfair advantage on Virginia's standardized tests. Children are required to know how to make such conversions with pencil and paper. Pencil, paper, buttons, what's the difference? 2 years ago, the State Education Department asked Texas Instruments to disable the decimal and the fraction key, and the company complied. But 12-year-old Dakota found that by pressing two other keys, he could make the conversion anyway. The kid, of course, was expelled, kicked out of the state, sent to Guantanamo Bay. But a school official says fellow students thought it was really cool and didn't call him a nerd or anything. Oh, gosh. How about that? And Texas Instruments has rewarded him with a graphing calculator. And told him if he finds any problems with that, to keep his mouth shut. Let's see. That's really it. That's really it. Well, you know, there's some other news, but nothing really on the current wire. Body parts falling out of the sky. Now, that's an interesting story. Whenever that happens, you stand up and take notice. But that's what's been going on Long Island today. I couldn't make this up. There are body parts falling out of the sky. Now, I'm as much in the dark on this as anyone, but apparently what happened was somebody stowed away on an airplane that came from South Africa, made a stop in Senegal. And the first clue that something was amiss was when police in Nassau County received a call about 11 o'clock this morning reporting a body part found in the backyard of a house. Apparently it hit the roof of a garage and bounced to the ground. It's my wife. And then a homeowner in Floral Park found body parts in her backyard when she returned from work. And more remains were found on the flight after it landed at Kennedy. So apparently what happened was somebody stowed away in the wheel well of the plane, and I guess they met with some real misfortune there. What an entrance. I mean, really, to be sprinkled across the country you're trying to escape into. But sad, it really is, but gruesome at the same time. Imagine, you know, having feet and torsos and things coming out of the sky. It's you know, not given enough to worry about. Now we have to worry about, I can't even fathom what that's like. Thank God I don't live under an airline path, or a flight path, whatever they call those things. But it makes me think. If Al-Qaeda could do this, you know, if they could smuggle, maybe not somebody, but something into a wheel well, as soon as the airplane puts its landing gear out, that's when whatever is there, that is, the chemical weapons, would be released into the air. Perhaps this was a test with some poor person to see if they would be released into the air, and next time it'll be the real thing. You know, it's something else to worry about. It really is. Something else to worry about. You know, some idiot on the way over here dropped a cigar out of his car. Swear to God, someone just... I mean, maybe there was an accident. But a full-size cigar just dropped out of the car and lying there in the middle of the road. And all the cars around suddenly swerve. Like this was something they had to avoid at all costs. How many times have you seen someone throw a cigarette out the window? And you run right over it without even thinking. Yeah, sure, it could bounce up and get into your gas tank somehow and your whole car could explode, but you don't think about that because it never happens. Well, cigar is just a bigger version of that, but everybody saw this in the ground and they went crazy. They went nuts. And I realized that's part of the post-9/11 world, you know. I suppose a full-size cigar could be a stick of dynamite. It looks like it might be. You see this thing smoking in the road? It's got to be, some kind of explosive, right? And, you know, that got me thinking, too. In the time when I was pounding on the door and trying to get in here, I was also contemplating this, that everything in our lives is pretty much measured by pre-9/11 and post-9/11. It's true. You know, the hardware failure we had the other night, we were pulling pieces of hardware out of our network configuration, and I was on the phone with people, and actually this came up as a way of dating the machinery. How long have you had that machine? Is it post-9/11 or pre-9/11? And I realized, you know, that's not a bad way to indicate how old something is. People you know, friends of yours, are they post-9/11 friends or pre-9/11 friends? If they're pre-9/11 friends, you've probably known them for a while. If they're post-9/11, well, maybe you don't know them that well. Maybe they're somebody, you know, you need to know a little better, because 9/11 wasn't that long ago. I just see that happening in more and more places. With the things you encounter on a day-to-day basis, with the people that you meet, it's awfully awfully strange and weird. So, the hardware failures were just a part of my fun-filled week. The other thing I'm doing, working on diligently, is filing the paperwork. When you go overseas, if you go to countries that are different than the normal countries, I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean the countries that don't ask for all kinds of paperwork when you come into their boundaries. Those I consider the normal countries. The ones that do ask you for all kinds of things, I consider them the freaks. Well, all right, that's not the right word. I didn't want to use that word. I consider them the pains in the ass, all right, because I've got to fill out all these papers, and it's insane. It's totally insane. What I'm doing, in case you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm basically taking a trip beginning in July that will involve going all the way around the globe without taking an airplane or a helicopter or a balloon or anything that goes up in the air, except maybe an elevator when I want to sleep someplace as high up. So that is going to involve going into various countries such as Russia, Belarus, Mongolia, China, and not all those countries. For some reason, Mongolia does not require any paperwork whatsoever for Americans. They do for Europeans, but not for Americans. Belarus, however, Russia, you have to not only apply, but you have to prove that you've been invited to the country. Now, what does that mean, invited to the country? Who's going to invite you to a country? Well, if you make a hotel reservation, the hotel will print out an invitation for you, and then you submit that invitation to the consulate. The consulate then prints out a visa, which they stick into your passport, and when you meet the border guard on the train or at the border or wherever, and he demands to see your passport and visa, he'll have a smile on his face when he finds it. That's what it's all about. That's the only reason you're doing it, to make him happy. Because they're not happy when you don't have that. So I've got to do this for several countries. And the way to do it is, you go to the consulate yourself, you wait online for hours and hours, you fill out all the forms, which are in a foreign language lots of times, you provide various proof of identity, things like that, or you have an agency just take care of it for you. You pay them a lot of money, and they just take care of the whole damn mess. And that's what I've been working on. Even that requires a lot of paperwork. Even that requires you to fill out literally two evenings solid worth of forms. And on top of everything else, I discovered, now these visas, if you have a passport, if you look in the passport, you'll notice that there are certain pages. Some say for visas, some say for addendums. Well, you need a certain amount of blank pages. And apparently the addendums don't count. You can't put a visa on an addendum page, even though they look exactly the same except that they say a different word. You have to have blank visa pages. And guess what? I don't have enough blank visa pages. Yeah, it's a real problem. So not only do I have to get all these invitations, permissions, reservations from all these countries, but before I can do that, I've got to somehow add pages to my passport that will allow me to stick the visas in there. And, you know, it just keeps going on and on from there. I have 6 weeks before I leave, but boy, you know, I'm already starting to panic. Whoever said traveling is going to be relaxing? It's not relaxing. It's very stressful. Preparation even more so. So yeah, I've been dealing with that. Somehow also it's issue time, and I'm working diligently on the summer issue of 2600. That happened at the same time. Somehow I wound up in a movie this weekend. Yeah, somebody slipped word out that I was an actor, which was a joke. I meant to say I was a liar, and now I'm in a film. I'm not going to give any more details. You'll have to find it yourself. Maybe if I don't make too much of a fool of myself, I might give more details out. But it's just, one other thing. You know, I've got to memorize all these things. Memorize lines. It's one thing to be just speaking, not making much sense for an hour, but to have to say something that does make sense, that someone else has written for you, and get it right. That's a lot of stress. And on top of that, I have people coming down and visiting from all over the place, and I want to hang out and do things and go out places. And I'm probably on trial somewhere too, and I don't even know it, because that's my kind of luck. Where everything happens at once. So, yeah, it's stressful. It's stressful, but fun. I love it. I really do. All right, let's celebrate something. Let's give credit to somebody who really deserves our thanks. No, not Chris. I gave him our thanks already for telling me how to get into the station. And again, thank you for that. You don't know who I'm talking about, do you? Well, I'll give you a hint. As of yesterday, something rather unpleasant is no longer probably going to happen because of one person. That's right, Sheldon Silver, Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver. Now, I probably don't agree with anything else that he's ever done in his life, but yesterday he had the guts to stand up to both Governor Pataki and Mayor Bloomberg and say no to this stupid idea of building a stadium on the west side of Manhattan. And in so doing, single-handedly prevented the stadium from being built and probably, most likely, almost certainly, got New York City out of the 2012 Olympic run, which also was a bit of a foolish idea. What I don't understand, I mean, I'm not against the Olympics, and it would be fun to have an Olympics in New York, I guess. Although, to be honest, after seeing what the New York City police did during the RNC last year, I don't think we deserve it. And I also don't think that any country, I think this should be a law, a rule, I don't think any country that is invading another country should be allowed to hold the Olympics. That should just be a rule. You have a good excuse for invading, whatever. Focus your time on the invasion. Don't worry about the Olympics. We'll take care of it. So, you know, I don't really have anything against the Olympics, and in the right setting, the right environment, like Paris, it could work. But no, not in New York, where everything is falling apart, where we can't get money to spend on important things, where we have idiots going around trying to sink God knows how much money into an unneeded stadium. And yeah, it's unneeded. It is so unneeded. The New York Jets need a home. The New York Jets have a home. Yeah, it's called Giant Stadium. It's in New Jersey. I'm sorry. You know, I want to be Pope, but I can't. No, I really don't. But I'm just saying, we don't all get what we want. We have, and this is what I really don't get. Nobody can explain this to me. Maybe somebody can write into us and explain it to me. OTW@2600.com. Please, let me know. We have Shea Stadium. We have Yankee Stadium. And we have Meadowlands Stadium. Those are three stadiums. And they're all within a few minutes of Midtown Manhattan. Why, in God's name, is that not enough for an Olympic bid? Why do you need to build a new stadium right smack in Manhattan? Why is that? Nobody has ever been able to answer that question. Some of the answers I have gotten are, well, Shea Stadium's falling apart. It's garbage. Okay, then, take the money that you are going to use to build an unneeded stadium and use that money to fix the broken stadium. Not that I think it's broken at all. I don't really see how stadiums can break. I think they should last centuries, but that's just my naivete. We obviously have enough sports structures. Coliseums, gardens, all kinds of things. People can play whatever sport they want. But the mayor, like a spoiled child, had to have it his way or no way. Now, there was an easy way this could have been resolved, simply by using the existing infrastructure, perhaps building a few new things. But this simply divided Manhattan, quite literally, was not something that people wanted. In fact, if you looked at the 123-page report that was released yesterday by the International Olympic Committee, you would have seen all five cities being analyzed. And there was a section in each city that focused on the public support for the Olympics being held, not only in that city, but citizens of that country. New York was so far below everybody else. It was above 50%. I was actually kind of surprised by that. It was something like 56%. But Paris was something like 90%. And I don't think anybody else dipped below the high 60s. So that's got to tell you something right there. Forget the stadium. Ask the people. If the people don't want this, it's probably not a good idea. And what the people do want, they want things like the Second Avenue subway. They want things like Ground Zero rebuilt. You know, they want all kinds of improvements to the infrastructure, which are not happening. Instead, hundreds of millions of dollars are being pledged to a stadium for what? For one team that plays, what is it, 16 games a year? And eight of those are at home. So eight football games is what we're paying for here. Because there's no other team that needs a stadium that I'm aware of. Certainly no other team that couldn't fit in a smaller stadium. But if you look at the reaction today, Mayor Bloomberg is saying, we have let America down. Oh, boo-hoo. We have let America down. in a matter of hours. New York City slipped from being a worthy contender for hosting the 2012 Summer Olympics to a long shot, contemplating a forfeit. That's right, a state panel, a three-man state panel. That sort of tells you how corrupt the whole system is when three people can decide this. But fortunately, at least one of them had integrity on this issue, at least. Anyway, that state panel yesterday denied an essential chunk of funding for a new $2 billion stadium on Manhattan's west side, the centerpiece of the city's bid to host the Olympics. Rules dictate the city cannot change its proposal, which the International Olympic Committee is considering, along with bids from Paris, London, Madrid, and Moscow for its decision July 6th. So I guess, you know, New York dug its own grave as far as that goes. They said, well, we're going to be using this stadium that doesn't exist. And they can't change that to say, well, we're going to use Shea Stadium instead. Yeah, we have let America down, said Bloomberg. The United States Olympic Committee selected us, New York, to represent the country. Other American cities wanted to have the privilege of competing at the world level. One day earlier, New York City officials were boasting about the Big Apple's strong chance in the showdown to host the Games. The IOC issued a Monday morning report evaluating each bid, giving Paris, London, Madrid, and New York positive ratings. Of course, they gave Paris and London really positive ratings. I don't think New York would have had a chance. The important thing was, though, that report came out before the vote. If the vote had happened on Friday like it was supposed to, it could have been very hard to stop. Because they would have voted for the stadium, they would have seen something which they could have contorted to mean, yeah, New York's got a fighting chance, despite the fact that London and Paris are really top-notch cities to have this in. And then, who knows what they would have done in the next 30 days before the final decision is made. It could have been the point of no return, where even when New York was denied the Olympics, the stadium couldn't be stopped at that point. And that would be really, really bad. Bad for everybody. You know, Montreal had an Olympics in 1976, which, by the way, they did with one stadium. Unless they have a whole bunch of stadiums I don't know about. The stadium the Expos used to play in before they moved to D.C. And someone told me they're still paying for that Olympics, 1976. So, you know, it's a fun game, it's a fun pastime, but it's expensive. And it's rather obnoxious to assume that everybody's going to support something just because you're a billionaire and you think it'll be fun. By the way, Bloomberg's a billionaire. Donald Trump is a billionaire. Why don't these people just donate? What is it, $200 million? That's all we're talking about here? $300 million. Okay, $300 million in funding. That's what the state was supposed to approve yesterday, and they didn't. So because of $300 million in shortfalls, they're not going ahead with it. These guys could write a check. They probably have that much on them. And build a stadium, and probably name it after themselves, and show that they really believed in it. Of course, you know, I sort of wish I hadn't brought this up, because they might get an idea from that, and that would be bad, because I really, really, really don't want that stadium there. It would be ugly, cause all kinds of traffic mayhem, so many better things we can be doing with the city, and we have enough damn stadiums as it is. So, yeah, it's good news. It's good news. My hat's off to Sheldon Silver. Of course, he is going to be blamed by everybody who wanted this thing. They're going to tar and feather the poor guy, because he'll be seen as the one person who stopped it. But in actuality, look at your fellow New Yorkers. They're the ones who stopped it. They're the ones who spoke out, who demonstrated against it. They're the ones who Sheldon Silver represents. And while, you know, the media may play this as the lower end of Manhattan versus Midtown Manhattan, which is a really silly thing, it's New Yorkers in general realize this is a bad idea. And there's so much else that could be done. So let's do that instead. So yeah, good news. We don't always report the bad news. That was definitely good news. Now let's get to the bad news. Let's see. Oh yeah, the follow-up on the toilet flushing incident. As you know, Newsweek reported that somebody flushed a Koran down the toilet in Guantanamo Bay. That led to riots in Afghanistan. And Newsweek, under tremendous pressure, back down from its story because it couldn't find any evidence that it happened. You know, the phrase, flushing something down the toilet, kind of implies in itself that you're getting rid of the evidence. So, how they expected to find this evidence is beyond me, but of course they couldn't produce it, therefore the story must have been wrong. All these pictures we see, all these incidents we hear of prisoners being abused, all the video we see, and we do see this. Maybe if you don't see it on American media, you should be watching more foreign media. But you see American soldiers screaming, yelling at women and children to follow their commands in a language they don't even understand. With all of that, all these people are going to instantly start respecting the holy book of this religion that they don't understand. Yeah, right. Of course things happened to the Quran. Of course things happened. There's no question about that. Is there video of it? Probably not. Is there a log file? Somebody tore up a book? Probably not as well. But here's what they did come up with. Here's what the media managed to come up with. They found that the detainees themselves had attempted to flush the Quran down the toilet. Not U.S. soldiers. Yeah, it's true. They've been investigating this. Now, in one incident, a guard said he saw a detainee place two Qurans in his toilet and state he no longer cared about the Quran or his religion. 5 minutes later, after the detainee retrieved the Qurans, when he probably realized that that wasn't going to work, he ripped several pages out of one Quran and threw the pages on the floor. Then he placed both Qurans on the sink. Another time, on January 19, 2005, a detainee tore up his Quran and tried to flush it down the toilet. Four guards witnessed the incident. Well then, you have your witnesses. The guards. The guards. Of course, they witnessed the detainees trying to flush their own Qurans down the toilet, but nobody witnessed any guards doing anything bad to Qurans. Well, yeah, there were a couple of incidents, because that would have been too unbelievable to say that nobody did anything. Once a guard's urine splashed a detainee in his holy book after coming through an air vent. How often do you see that? Someone's urinating and it comes through an air vent and splashes people and books? Another time, guards got in a water balloon fight. Oh, you rascals. A water balloon fight. It resulted in two detainees' Qurans getting wet. You see, it's all in good-natured fun. Nobody means any harm. That's what the investigation has shown. Yeah, comedy. That's what it is. It's comedy. And if you think body parts falling out of the sky is disturbing, in Japan, and I'm going to be investigating this when I'm in Japan, which, by the way, doesn't require a visa, thousands of sharp-edged pieces of metal have been found protruding from roadside guardrails around Japan, and authorities are investigating the bizarre phenomenon. About 24,000 knife-shaped pieces of metal have been found stuck in guardrails in all Japan's 47 states in the past week. Did you know Japan had 47 states? I don't think I knew that. The ominous-looking metal fragments have been repeatedly shown on television, and photographs of them have been published in newspapers as the nation puzzles over the mystery. It's eerie, said one newspaper. Why are such objects, so many of them, all over the country? If they had been intentionally installed, it's a serious crime. How do you intentionally install 24,000 knives without somebody noticing? Anyway, the Land and Transport Ministry's website said it will launch a nationwide investigation. I hope the ministry will do that, not the website. The ministry also asked witnesses for information. Police are investigating the case on suspicion of assault and traffic law violations, while also suspecting vehicle collisions as a possible cause. But why only in Japan? That does seem kind of weird. Let's see. Today also is New Jersey primary day, and they're reporting record low turnouts. This is for the gubernatorial race, and it's for voting on who's going to be representing in the election in November. One polling station says they're averaging 4 voters per hour. 4 per hour. Another official says it's the lightest turnout he's seen in years. So people people around here really care about what's going on around them. Maybe it's just too hot. Yeah, that's it. It's just too hot to go outside. And let's see some listener mail. OTW@2600.com. Here's a greeting from Joe C. over there in Moscow, which I'm going to be heading for fairly soon. Greetings from Moscow. Got to hear the last 15 minutes of your show here in Moscow, the former home of communism, and now the bastion of BMWs and Mercedes-Benzes. Well, greetings, Joe, and I don't know if you're still over there, but it's really cool to know that the signal can make it all the way to Moscow. And if the signal doesn't make it, if the stream doesn't make it, the archive will. All of our shows are archived. www.2600.com/off-the-wall. And again, you can email us, otw@2600.com. Dear Off the Wall, how do you feel about the law system in the state of New York? As for myself, I have major gripes about the legal system here. For instance, I got caught driving with a suspended license not too long ago. In court, the judge wanted to lock me up for 30 days. And a kid a few people before me got caught driving under the influence of marijuana. That's right, possession on his person and in the car.
It's brutal. People trust it because it's a little pill.
I just mentioned the word. He only got 3 months restricted license, a $500 fine, and a slap on the wrist. What gives on that? Well, sir, you didn't mention which minority group you were a part of. So obviously that would have some indication as to how severely you were treated. But, yeah, justice and traffic court, forget about it. It's not going to happen. Thanks for continuing to cover Guantanamo and the war. Just wondering if you know of Michael Frumkin, a lawyer who's got a blog. A lawyer with a blog. That's a great combination. Who's been excellent on covering the legal and constitutional issues around torture and detainees. He also specializes in internet law. Blog is at discourse.net/archive/Guantanamo. And if you don't know how to spell Guantanamo, I'm sorry, you should by now. I agree it's crazy to charge the runaway bride. The DA is a moron. The woman was frightened. I disagree that I should charge the parents whose toddler was killed. They've already paid everything for their mistake. What good could it do for anybody now? Well, you know, I sympathize with that. We're talking, of course, about the toddler who was killed when he wandered onto the makeshift targeting range that his parents set up. And yeah, you know, anytime your kid gets killed, it's a horrible thing, and you certainly pay a lot in tragedy. But if it's negligent homicide, which is what that was, you know, you gotta take some responsibility. You gotta take some responsibility. Firing guns around kids in any situation is a crime, as far as I'm concerned, and you can't stress that enough. But yeah, it must be a really horrible thing. And finally, dear Off the Wall, you can put this email in the pile of mails you need for your coming fight with the FCC. And that fight is coming. Believe me, that fight is on the way. I'm not putting it off. It's just takes a lot of preparation, and I got all these other things I'm worrying about right now. I hear that from many other emails you read, people say that the FCC rules and regulations do not affect them because they live in another country, as I do myself. However, the FCC does affect my listening when I listen to the radio shows from the U.S., like Off the Wall and many others. So I'd be happy to add my name to the list of growing names. I'm ready to do what is needed to fight the ridicules and oppressive regulations of the FCC. Great show. Keep up the good work. Signed, Alan from Cumbernauld, Scotland. Well, Alan, thank you very much. It's good to know there's support out there. And yes, you know, it does affect you. It does affect you as far as what you listen to. But unfortunately, you're not a citizen of the United States. So therefore, you know, you can't vote the bastards out. Of course, we can't do that either, can we? But, well, you know, I like to think that we can do something. And if you want to join us in a march on Washington or something like that, by all means. We'll be planning things like that to get the airwaves back. Well, in any event, it's time for us to get out of here. And, you know, there are many songs about burning churches, but this has got to be my favorite from one of my favorite bands, as mentioned, Electric Hellfire Club. A little combination of Satanism and drug abuse there. It's called Book of Lies, and what a terrific way to leave us. We'll see you next week. Have a good night.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.